Before we get into the conversation, here's a little bit of information about how this podcast series came about.
Hello, my name is Cizizo, and I'm the curator in residence at City Arts and the producer of Catalyst, a programme that has been designed in response to City Arts Black Lives Matter commitments and a series of conversations that followed. Looking back at the conversations, the group discussed events that followed the tragic murder of George Floyd and the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement. They also spoke about navigating the arts, their own practices, and their vision for anti-racism within the sector. One particular discussion that took place was one in which the group spoke about the people who had inspired them, both personally and professionally. And so I wanted to produce a series in which some of my favourite creatives from Nottingham could do just that for listeners, particularly for aspiring creatives of African Caribbean heritage. I also wanted the series to give an insight into the journey of some of these creatives, for them to be able to share their experiences about some of the wins, about some of the losses, and the things that drive their practices. Whilst it's also important to speak about racism, and we do cover that within the series, it was also important to give space for discussion outside of it. The experiences of Black people are not monolithic, and our identities are much more than the struggles and suffering of racism. The conversations will explore the guests' creative processes, the 2020 anti-racism protests, and mental health. The podcasts will also look at entrepreneurship and the guests' experiences of navigating the pandemic. Community Conversations is hosted by Rachel Wilcox. Rachel is arts editor at Left Lion, a Nottingham-based cultural magazine, and contributing writer for Black Ballad, a UK-based lifestyle platform that seeks to tell the human experience through the eyes of Black British women. Alongside writing, Rachel has a wealth of volunteer experience within the cultural sector. She currently works as arts marketer at New Art Exchange. Thank you so much for listening into Community Conversations. We hope you enjoy the episode. The episode of Community Conversations that you're about to listen to was recorded on location at City Arts on the 17th of December 2020. The relevant guidelines regarding social distancing at the time were followed.
Hello, thanks for listening. My name is Rachel and you're listening to the City Arts Community Conversations podcast. In this episode, we spoke to Nathaniel Wilson, founder of MIM and Nottingham Street Food Club. MIM combines the worlds of fashion, music and art through clothing, audio and visual events, creative space, street art and radio.
MIM was started as a clothing shop. And what I quickly realised when I was going through the Prince's Trust in terms of doing my business plan was I got a £2,000 loan off the Prince's Trust to set up a shop that was next to nothing. There was no way that you could set up a shop on your own for £2,000. And even going further back, so when I was 18, I used to work at a shop called 2AD, which is where White Rose is. It's next to the Oxfam shop on Goose Gate. And the guy who was kind of a bit of my mentor, a guy called Damone, I rung him up with the idea to say that I wanted to kind of set up my own shop. And this was 4 years after I worked for him. So he had left Nottingham by then. And I told him that I had £2,000 and he says, no chance. You ain't going to be able to open that shop whatsoever. So it kind of got me thinking, how can I do this? Well, obviously I wasn't going to be able to do this on my own. So it kind of made me think, well, should I approach people and get them involved? And without really understanding the sense of community or understanding what community meant, I kind of went about trying to bring people together initially for when we launched it. And that kind of spiraled into, you know, obviously opening up the rails for different clothing designers. Then it spiraled into artists and musicians and everybody having a shared love for creativity. And that was the kind of catalyst for MIM to kind of expand into all these different areas, which was interesting. And it kind of just birthed that community mentality that you see today.
Inclusivity is so important to Nathaniel's work ethos, and it's something he's embedded within MIM's branding with the phrase, for all minds, MIM fam.
For me, I think there's been a definite kind of conscious change within people's mentalities of, you know, that we need to be more inclusive in all things that we do. It's something which I've always had rooted in me in terms of my morals and how I've been brought up, but I've never really kind of put that to the forefront of what I'm doing. It's good not to put too much boundaries on what people are going to do, but it's great to get people in the room together and see what happens. I think that is the process. I wouldn't want to be like, this is what I expect, this is what's going to happen, da da da. I think it's more about find the people, get them in a room together. There's no pressure to create anything with each other, but if that happens, that'll be amazing. They'll, you know, the people who I'll bring through will obviously learn certain things which I would require them to do through MIM, whether that's a photographer doing photo shoots for a clothing collection that we're going to release, or a graphic designer designing some MIM clothes or whatever. But then with them being around each other, they're going to create other stuff which is away from MIM, and that's what I want to see. I want to see people build their own stuff through what we're doing. And you know, the proudest things that I see over the last couple of years is that we've been in a position to either link people up, or they've started, or they've cut their teeth with us, and then they've gone on off their own back, they've done their own thing. That's beautiful for me, because I know that I was at that starting point for certain individuals, and all of these individuals, you know, you've seen them go on to greater things. And that's, yeah, that's what I really like. That's what I really enjoy. Because that builds a scene and that builds a community. Because the more people in this city who are doing great things on their own or off their own back, the better. It builds that buzz. For me, I think there's been a definite kind of conscious change within people's mentalities of, you know, that we need to be more inclusive in all things that we do. It's something which I've always had rooted in me in terms of my morals and how I've been brought up, but I've never really kind of put that to the forefront of what I'm doing. And I think now, if there's any time to do that, it's now. And what I want it to represent, what I want MIM Fam or For All Minds to represent, is somewhere which is welcoming to all people from all backgrounds. I think that's fundamental. Going back to kind of the collective and the MIM Collective, when we started that, I didn't really know what we were doing, but we had so many different people from so many different backgrounds, and it was amazing. And now that now I've moved into having a bit more experience of how to facilitate this, and we have a space where we can welcome creatives to be a part of what we're doing, I think it's important to send that message that if you share the same values as us, then, and you share the same ethics and work hard with what you do, then we should collaborate, regardless to wherever you are. As long as your views are accepting to all people, we can work together. And that's the kind of, this is the new MIM Fam, which kind of came into my mind, is like creating that fam. Like we've always said, like, let's build fam. That's always been our thing. But then creating, and a fam isn't just necessarily people who are within our space, it's anyone who we work with. It's a family, and it's supposed to promote the idea of collaboration with all people. So that's why it's For All Minds, because before we were kind of saying it was for the independent mind. And it is important to have that independent mentality. Genuinely, people who get involved with MIM do already. So I wanted to tap into the fact that people who think differently but share a common ethos can come together with that mindset.
After the death of George Floyd, pledges for diversity were made in abundance. Nathaniel shares his views about how and when he thinks we might start seeing the real benefits of this strategic change.
It's a tricky one. It's a double-edged sword in the sense that, you know, you could, for argument's sake, you could say, why were these organisations not having that diversity chat, you know, that conversation about diversity before this? Because it's something which, for myself, I suppose it's more because I am mixed race, is that I've always been, or MIM has always been a place that has such a diverse community around it. I think it's good that people are having that conversation, but I hope that it doesn't fade away. That's my only concern is that you have this knee-jerk reaction of all these organisations kind of saying that they're, you know, pro this, pro that, and then the conversation stops and it just gets lost in the sea of social media onto the next thing. What is the next buzz? Do you know what I mean? Have we become a thing where we're just like, okay, that's what I'm focusing on, and then I'm going to focus on this, and then I'm going to, and then you lose the point of what we were trying to do, which is get justice, you know, and get equality for black people or for people from all backgrounds, you know. Time will tell with that. I think it's great that we're having the conversation, and it's great that people are getting more opportunities from different backgrounds and from the black community. But I don't think, there's an interesting thing, like I don't think you'll see the effects of this right now. I think you may see it in 10, 20 years time when the changes which have been made have taken effect, because we're dealing with a generation now who are, you know, having that conversation, but it takes years for it to actually be seen. So when you have people in positions which they weren't in previously, they can make changes to the next generation who come through, and then that feeds the next generation, and then you see a real change. So it's great that we can see people from, you know, black communities or people from black backgrounds being in a bit more of a position where they can call the shots. But like I said, it's going to take time to see the real benefits of that.
We discuss influencers and talk about why, despite being miles away, generations of black Britons look to America instead, because it felt closer and provided a reflection of themselves that was missing in the UK.
One of the things that I've kind of been really researching at the moment is black British culture.
Right.
So Mim's always been influenced by American culture, because that's kind of the go-to for everybody. Like,
is that like the hip-hop?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's always been the go-to for that, and that's what Mim's heavily been influenced by the last 10 years. But now that, because of what happened in June, there's a real conversation within our own country about what is our history. What did our grandma, granddads do during this 40 or 70 years that, you know, the Windrush generation first came over? I'm sure, have you seen the Steve McQueen?
Small Axe,
yeah? So the Lover's Rock thing.
Yeah.
So the Lover's Rock, obviously, that was the foundation of having the sound system in a party. And obviously the reason behind that was because, you know, black people either couldn't go to the clubs or there was a quota that only a certain amount of black people could go in there. And it just got me thinking, because, you know, I've always been into bass heavy music, or like, you know, dubstep and house and drum and bass and jungle and all that kind of stuff. But then I was like, well, obviously that was influenced all the way back into the 70s. I'm kind of really like digging into that and researching that and trying to understand what that means. So my brother was heavily into hip hop, and I think I kind of, everything that comes along with hip hop is more than just the music, it's the fashion, it's the art, and everything in between. So that was kind of the foundation. I grew up in a house where Motown, Funkadelic, or like funk music, Parliament, jazz, John Coltrane, Miles Davis, was the soundtrack to the house, innit? And it was obviously American black culture. Because if I'm being honest, you know, my dad, he's in 65 now. I think he lived that British, black British experience, but his kind of thing, his focal point was the American experience. Because I just think that's how the media is, isn't it? You know, the record labels are in America. You know, that's, you know, the documentaries are being made or whatever.
Definitely how it was back then.
Yeah. Definitely. So that's what he kind of tapped into. But That was what I kind of drew on with everything that I was doing, is that understanding that, and as I said with my brother as well, him showing me the hip hop scene and all that kind of stuff. That's where I drew my influences from black culture. But like I said, it's really nice to be able to kind of completely move away from that now and focus on British black culture, because there's more of a conversation happening. And that's what's exciting me now.
We talk about the complexities and challenges of being mixed race.
I definitely can relate to you on the point of like being in a household and having a black parent who embraces, well, not embraces, but is showing you black American culture, because that was the thing, and that's kind of was the focal back then.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to ask you about being mixed race and how you feel like that has affected your identity and your work and your inspirations. I'm mixed race myself, and I don't think it's the subject that is touched upon that much.
Yeah.
And I do feel like going forward, there is going to be a lot more talk about blackness now, and I think that needs to be open to all the different perspectives of blackness that there is.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's such a variety of different stories in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I think, yeah, I've, I don't know, it's tough, because my heritage, you know, I'm half white. My dad is, he's half black, half Jamaican Indian. So I had a real mix. So I'm like, you know, I'm Indian, black and white. So for me, kind of growing up, it was, you know, it was a bit challenging sometimes in terms of finding where you belonged as an individual. And, you know, going into the plumbing game, it was just racist. Like being on site, just racist. And it wasn't racist towards black people. It was racist towards Asian people. And it's weird because people would say this around me because they didn't see me as Asian, even though I had Asian in me. And I would listen to it. And I'm 18. I didn't have the kind of guile to go like, what are you talking about? Because I was obviously an apprentice. So I'd kind of like listen to it. And I was thinking, this is messed up, you know. But then for me, I kind of viewed it like me being mixed race. It was one of them where I eventually got to a point where I found it very empowering because of all the different cultures that I can look into and draw on, and it can be my own, whether that is my white heritage, my black heritage, my Indian heritage. I have so many things that I can draw from and learn about. I see it as a real, you know, a real kind of, I think I'm lucky that I'm in that position.
Yeah.
But it was tough, like, growing up, it was hard because, you know, I played in, like, an all-black football team. But obviously, like, the black people would always see your Indian side. The white people would always see your black side. The Indian people wouldn't even know that you were Indian or black or whatever. So it was like, where do you fit in that? Mm. And that was interesting. But I kind of, like, it's empowering now. I've got to a point where it's empowering. And
kind of harnessed it.
I've harnessed it, and you know, I'm proud of it. That's the fundamental thing. And it means that with MIM and what we do, I can draw on all these things and educate myself, which is
so
a great thing.
In a way, I guess it probably has affected how you're working and how you are creative in that sense that, you know, you're touching back to earlier on, you talked about the whole fam for all minds, inclusivity.
Yeah, that's exactly
it. Ethos that's come from
from you and
your identity.
100%, and that trying to see all spectrums of it, you know, and you know, being respectful to all viewpoints, and you know, being open to learn. That's what I think's come with my mixed race heritage. 100%. You can get that through people who, you know, if you have a kind of a multicultural friendship group, you can get the same thing.
Yeah.
But if you want to listen to your friends, you know, if you've got friends from various different backgrounds, you can get that. You don't have to just be mixed race. But it's my experience of going through that journey, and also having a very multicultural friendship group as well, that it's just really, it fascinates me 100%.
To wrap it up, I asked Nathaniel what he wished he had known when he started out.
One of the things is like not the losses which happen, which inevitably happen, not to beat yourself up about. I think in the first few years of MIM, I think, you know, it definitely was tough. you know, I had to work like two jobs. So I had to get up like 6 o'clock in the morning just to pay the rent for the shop and spend money on certain things and make mistakes and beat myself up about it. But as I got older, I kind of understood that within business, you have your highs, you have your lows. It's not always going to be plain sailing. Understanding that, but also understanding that you're always going to make mistakes. I'm still going to make mistakes. Like, you know, hopefully the mistakes I make won't be as crippling as they was back then, because back then I didn't have the flexibility that I do now. But, you know, it's important that you do make mistakes and you learn from them. So I think in the past, I've been poor at communicating what I actually want from an individual. And I can imagine that was very frustrating for them individuals. So it's like being able to let go, but also communicate it well, so that people know what they need to be doing, as opposed to like me kind of trying to manage it myself, which is, it's not good. I think the only way that you can expand is if you build a good team. And it is the team which is going to make things pop off. One man is not an island, or whatever they say. What do they say?
Something like that.
Yeah. One man shouldn't be an island. And understand that energy is everything. Like, right now I can feel that there's something bubbling. And I thought, I'm sure it's for a lot of people because they've had time to reflect and plan and grow. And it's about just taking that and running with it. And I think that's, I think I've got real, like, well, I've got cautious optimism for next year. We will see.
I like that. I used to tell everyone as well.
Cautious. You know what it was, you know what it was at the end of last year. So we were working with this amazing collective called Lusty Arts Collective, which is fronted by Tony Sparks. And we did a few sessions down at a place called Mount Street where we did like live recordings and stuff. And it felt like there was a real energy. And all of us were like, 2020, 2020 vision, 2020. We jinxed ourselves massively. So now I'm like, I'm cautiously optimistic, because I don't want to be like, we're going to, I know I've reeled off the things that we're going to do, but, you know, I'm prepared for them not to happen now. It's fine.
I think that's a good mindset to have anyway, pandemic or no pandemic.
Adaptability is the most, that's one of the things that I've learned the most over the last 10 months, is the ability to problem solve, adapt, find solutions. And I think for everyone, I think that, not just myself, but I think anybody who's gone through that same process, I feel like that's going to stand everybody in good stead in the future, regardless to whatever happens with this pandemic. But yeah, it's just about trying to maintain a positive mind frame is really important. And that goes back to kind of what I wish I had have done throughout the whole 10 years is just, I'm understanding the ability to have a positive mind frame, no matter what is against you now. You know, if you can put your mind in the right vibe, then you can just keep progressing no matter what happens. And that's what I will do. I will keep progressing no matter what happens, because I believe in helping this city, and nothing is going to deter me from that.
Many thanks to Nathaniel for taking the time to share his experiences with us. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Until the next episode, goodbye.